fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the March 18th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. If you tuned in to the top of Wednesday's show, you heard me mention how World Athletics officially launched a 3D virtual museum this week. It offers visitors an interactive journey through the history of athletics, and it highlights many of the legends of the sport. To find out more about the museum, the energetic Andy Edwards contacted Chris Turner, the director, Heritage Department at World Athletics. Here's Andy.
Well, in these times of pandemic and lockdown, many of us have had to improvise and adapt, and that goes for World Athletics, and it also goes for one of their longtime staff, Chris Turner. And I have to say, I've known Chris over quite a few years. We're fellow Britons and fellow journalists and working in the media. And Chris Turner is currently Director, World Athletics Heritage Department. Well, we may come on to talk about that in general, but a new project has just been launched by World Athletics, with Chris very much at the head of the team. And that is the first ever 3D virtual sports museum, of course, concentrating on athletics. It was launched this week, and I really like the title, Chris, MOWA, Museum of World Athletics. And you mentioned this at the press conference. It makes many of us think, I'm sure many listeners think, of MoMA, Museum of Modern Art in New York. But give us a taste of how MOWA, the Museum of World Athletics, came about. You were very much one of those driving this forward. And what's special about it?
Thank you, Andy. Yes, and just to everybody, yes, we've known each other for many, many years. I think we're just about as passionate about athletics as each other. I'll first start with the name. Because heritage is seen, probably in a lot of eyes, just by the name, as a bit dusty, I never wanted it to be called a museum. And I was just about going on a call with the people who were building it, and I was intent on something. It just wasn't going to be called a museum. And I got an email popped up from our marketing departments giving me this name. And thanks to the New York Marathon and the Diamond League meeting in New York, I love New York. And obviously the Museum of Modern Art is one of my favorites. And it just pinged up on an email, and I saw the name, and immediately gut reaction, which is always best, I think, in life. I went, yes, good. I just texted them, yes, we're having that, and went straight onto the call. And it was as instinctive as that. And I do hope that we, in our own field, become as famous and as popular as that museum. But in terms of how did it begin, I went to the senior management here in the end of 2016 with this idea of honouring our past and preserving some of its artefacts, and in turn promoting the sport. You know, as you already explained in the intro, I've been in communications all my life, in athletics communication, track and field. Original concept had a virtual museum, but we were a very, very small department here, three people. And I must admit, in the first 2 years, we were launched in January 2018 and had a public launch of the World Indoors in March 2018. I just didn't have the time, and we've got the smallest budget. I don't mind about that, because it's for me to prove myself, and no money to do it. So it was very much on the back burner. But when a year ago to this week, when we were locked down in France, my first thought was, what am I going to do? Because basically heritage was going around the world with a collection which we'd built up over the first 2 years. Though our world championships for 6 months, we're at the Continental Cup in Ostrava for 3 months, showing those exhibits as you would like a mobile museum in itself. Suddenly I saw the whole program of what we were doing to be threatened. And I had to think very quickly. And I looked back to that concept document, and it was quite clear straight away we had to go online.
And may I say, you've turned, made a virtue out of a necessity, in the sense that I've had a tour, because this museum is free to all. It's online, obviously, and it's 3D. So, I mean, just looking at the African section. I've just had glimpses, and I think I've only dipped a toe in the virtual water so far. But looking at Vivian Cheruiyot, Olympic 2016 champion on the track for Kenya, her spikes, and Morocco's Neja Bidouane, her racing vest and spikes when she won World Championship 400 hurdles title. So you had to adapt and work with Czech people, and there's the track and field link, I think, with one of the leading figures in the tech firm you worked with, to create something that people could enter. I think it was a bit like online archaeology, where I got the feeling of going in through a classical Greece, and you going in through that tunnel and take your pick from the continents. But you had to create this so that you can see Vivian Cheruiyot spikes in 3D. I mean, that is not a simple process.
No, you're quite right. And we were very lucky. We had a tender process, but it had to be quick because I saw the urgency of this. It came down to two companies. One company, which was involved with the very successful bid by LA to stage the Olympic Games, and they very good at 3D. And a British company, DC Active, which, as you said, DC Active Sport, which is actually headed by Jason Gardner, Olympic sprint relay champion, world indoor champion, 60 metres from 2004. And there was very little between the two, but the real deciding point came that of Jason's experience in the sport. Obviously, that was good. But there was just an element of more reality to the images which I saw from that company. And I did want this to be a real feeling of a space. And from what everybody seems to be saying to me, you do feel you're in a room. And I've had lots of people saying to us, where is this museum? And that I couldn't want a better recommendation to be asked that question. So yeah, it came down to the 3D. An amazing process. So this is not, we created 3D film, but it's 3D film made out of photographs. Basically, every image is taken 36 times for each degree for 360. And that is what is made out into the film. And because of that, the files are huge. We have extraordinary detail. So you can zoom in and out. To be quite honest, and I do want to continue looking at the greatest athletics championships and Olympic Games around the world in the future. But quite a lot of people here will probably say, actually, you can see it better online than you can with the actual museum or an exhibition in real. Because you haven't got a glass partition between you and something in a cabinet. And I do think we've got an immediacy and a connection here, which is quite remarkable, given that it is online.
And I think the hashtag is significant. The hashtag is, if I've got it right, you'll correct me if I've got it wrong, hashtag where champions live.
Where champions live forever.
And key point.
That came from a communications department, a lady who actually is doing what my previous job in communications. And again, it was just one of those, when we talked about a group effort, we're talking about our broadcasting department, some fantastic videos, as you've seen in the museum. Our IT department, marketing, are now running a months-long campaign. And communications, as I said. Now, why am I talking about this group effort? I'm talking about a group effort because Heritage was, as I said at the beginning of this call, was a niche product. And I've always understood that. We had to prove ourselves. In the genesis of this, and now to the delivery, we've gone from being niche to being strategic in terms of this world athletics. My greatest asset, and I don't say this lightly, and I don't say it because he's my boss, is I have a fellow historian at the top of the organization, Seb Coe, and he is very firmly in support of what we're doing as a department. I wouldn't be doing this. This department wouldn't exist without him. And he recognized what we had to do. And with that group support, you can't really go far wrong, to be quite honest.
And the contributions, I'd say, I've talked in African terms about Vivian Cheruiyot spikes, Neja Bidouane spikes, and their contributions from athletes from all the six continents. When you enter this origins, this tunnel, and then you're in, well, really is an Aladdin's cave from my my brief experience so far. Who is providing those contributions, those items?
they are directly, most of them directly from the athletes themselves. As you know, Andy, I've been a collector all my life. And given the direct access I've had with some great Olympic champions, I've been very lucky to build those connections up. But yes, generally, it's the athletes who have come to us. We don't proactively go out. When I started the heritage department, people that went, there was a resonance around that what we're trying to do. And yeah, it's a generosity, but it's an understanding from these athletes that they want to be cemented in our sports history, but they understand how important it is to educate fans and actually athletes of the present generation, of the stars that went before. Because it's actually one of the worrying things I had, which is why I wanted the department and this program to start, was there are present generation athletes who possibly besides the athlete there competing against on that day and maybe the previous champion from their event, they don't know any history of our sport. So you could have sprinters lining up in Tokyo who don't know who Jesse Owens is. I know that sounds bizarre, but this is why Heritage is doing what it's doing. We want to put their place in history and give people a feeling of that they're carrying on that generation, they're carrying on that tradition, and have respect for their past. And that, for me, is the most important thing, to understand what they're doing.
That's Chris Turner, the director, Heritage Department at World Athletics. And we'll hear more of Chris's conversation with the energetic Andy Edwards in the days to come. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African athletics, Ghana's best sprinter this year is still hoping to qualify for the Tokyo Olympics. Joining us now from Accra with an update is Yao Afusu-Larbi. Sporty greetings, Yao.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. 2021 has been a massive year for Ghana's Benjamin Asamati at the West Texas A&M University. First, he smashed his own record in the 60-meter dash, then set a personal best, went on to become the fastest in that college in the 60-meter indoor event, and is now national champion in the track event. The NCAA Indoor National Championships were held last weekend, and Ghana's sprinter was there to fly the country's flag. He won the 60-meter final with a quick 6.60 seconds, becoming the first West Texas A&M athlete to win a national title. He currently holds the fastest time in the NCAA DII in the whole of the United States.
For trainings and everything, I leave them into the hands of the coaches. So I just have to trust them, whatever that they do. So I think it has been the normal training routines. Nothing has changed. And I keep on improving each time I step on the track. So I think we have to still maintain the training programs and everything. And then I think that is what is actually helping me.
Albeit his exceptionally good times in the 60-meter dash, Asamati finished third in the 200-meter indoor race. He hasn't run enough 100-meter races to clock the mark for the Olympic Games, and he admits that it's quite frustrating for him.
In the 200, you know, you need much of the speed, endurance and everything. So yeah. When I got here first, I had injury, so I wasn't really training for the 200. So after some time, he had to train me for the 200, and, you know, because I wanted to run it. I can't just be doing the 60, the 100, and then the 400 by 100. So I wanted to do the 200 too, and then he started training me for that. But anytime I run, I improve. So I think I'm doing well on that. And, you know, I just want to improve my 200. In that way, my 100 is going to be better.
With the Tokyo Olympic Games in sight, Asamati's dream is to qualify and represent Ghana at the World Sports Festival.
Yeah, it puts pressure on me, you know, but the pressure is just for me to perform better. So we are going into the outdoor. Now is the time for us to run the 100 meters and the 200 in order to see if we can qualify or not. But, you know, nothing is impossible. So I'm still training for it, and that is my goal this year. So I hope to hit it.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Yao Afusu-Larbi in Accra.
My name is Benjamin Asamati, a member of the quartet team that won gold for Ghana in the African Games that happened in Morocco, Rabat. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In European club football, Chelsea and reigning title holder Bayern Munich scored victories at home Wednesday to advance to the quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League tournament. In Munich, Bayern moved a step closer to defending its Champions League title by beating Lazio of Italy 2-1. Polish star Robert Lewandowski and the Cameroonian Choupo-Moting had the goals for Bayern, which easily won the series 6-2 on aggregate. And in London, the Blues of Chelsea reached the last eight for the first time since 2014, scoring a 2-0 victory against Atletico Madrid of Spain. Chelsea got a 34th-minute goal from the Moroccan Hakim Ziyech and a late strike from substitute Emerson. Chelsea won the home-and-away series 3-0 on aggregate. Chelsea's manager Thomas Tuchel says his team was not at full strength, and he's delighted with its performance.
The amount of effort and intensity, the teamwork in both legs was fantastic and really incredible and outstanding. We missed four or five key players, four of them always ready to start with Andreas, Thiago, Mason and Jorginho. Everybody else stepped up with huge support from the bench, huge support from the stands, the guys who were injured and not here. And this is what I feel. Guys, totally reliable. The effort and intensity is incredible. It's hard teamwork. And I'm very, very happy because we have moments where we are excellent with the ball, but we never lose intensity against the ball. We play very brave and very courage in defending and adapt to any system that the opponents play today. So over two legs is a deserved win, which is a big win because it's the quarterfinal. And I'm super happy for my players.
The Chelsea manager is super happy for his players, who he says are showing unique camaraderie right now.
They play with a special bond, and fixtures like this and results like this give you the certain edge and the certain clue to achieve special things. You can only do this with a special atmosphere, and right now we are in this draw. And I'm pretty sure that nobody wants also to play against us. And this will be a super difficult challenge, of course, because we're in the last eight, which is already a big step. But from there on we go, and there's no need to be afraid. We take what we get, and we'll prepare the best way possible.
Chelsea manager Thomas Tuchel. The draw for the UEFA Champions League quarterfinals will be on Friday, joining Chelsea and defending champion Bayern Munich in the quarterfinals are Liverpool, Manchester City, Paris Saint-Germain, Borussia Dortmund, Porto, and Real Madrid.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In African football, Mozambique is preparing for Africa Cup of Nations qualifying matches this month in Rwanda and at home against Cape Verde. Now, 2022 Nations Cup host Cameroon earned an automatic berth and tops Group F with 10 points from four qualifiers. Mozambique and Cape Verde each have 4 points, and Rwanda is at the bottom of the table with 2 points. To find out more about Mozambique's qualifying chances, Iron Mike Mbonye called Maputo, where he reached the team's Portuguese head coach, Luis Goncalves.
Right now, we are second, but we have 4 points. Mozambique and Cape Verde have 4 points. We have chances to qualify, of course. We are betting this is our chance. But it's going to be difficult because Rwanda, they have their chances too. So we are focused on our goal, our objective to qualify to final phase. But we have our chances, I can say.
Do you think Rwanda and Cape Verde will pose threat to your qualifying for AFCON?
Yes, of course, because right now the three teams have chances to qualify: Rwanda, Mozambique, and Cape Verde. Rwanda, right now, they have 60% of the team. They They are composed by local players, and they played the CHAN in January, last January, so they are well prepared. We are waiting for our players. I hope the clubs in Europe set free our players to play for Mozambique. So ain't going to be easy, but we're going to do our best to qualify.
Can you tell Sunnyside of Sports listeners if you have any injury worries ahead of the two qualifying matches?
Right now we have one player that we are waiting the medical report from his club, Glasio. But I think he's going to be okay for our matches, our decisive matches. I'm waiting. I hope I can kind of have the team complete, because it's very important. We have two very important matches. And we have a problem here because the CAF changed the match from 26 to 24. And we don't going to have time to prepare the match against Rwanda. So all players are important, and I hope I can have the team complete. So I need that the clubs from Europe, they understand our position and they free the players. I hope so. Yes, we want to win our matches because we only depend for ourselves. But we know we're going to have two difficult, very difficult matches, because Rwanda, they have their ambition also, and Cape Verde also, naturally. But we're going to do our best to win the two matches. Besides that, I hope that Cameroon won their matches too. So not going to be easy, but we're going to do our best.
That's Luis Goncalves, the head coach of Mozambique's national football team. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Maputo, Mozambique.
Sporty greetings. This is Harry Sokata, president of African Tall Goal Foundation. You are listening to Sunnyside of Sports on the Voice of America.
A Cameroonian golf champion who lost his legs and most of his fingers to meningitis in 2018 now has his sights set on winning a gold medal at this year's Paralympics in Tokyo. In this report by Anne Zwanka in Yaounde, Moki Edwin Kinzika tells us more.
As a child, 30-year-old Issa Naleb Amang liked to play at his neighborhood golf course. He quickly went from being a ball boy to a caddy, and then from playing golf to becoming a champion of Cameroon and West Africa. Amang was the first African to gain entry to the ALPS Tour, a non-profit by Austria, France, Italy, and Switzerland to improve young golf professionals' tournament skills. But during a 2018 tournament in Egypt, Amang caught meningitis, an inflammation of brain and spinal cord membranes. He went into a coma and, suffering from septic shock, had to have most of his fingers and both legs amputated.
Ça a été très compliqué d'avoir les prothèses, d'être debout.
Despite the traumatic loss, Amang says he has never given up. He says it was very complicated to have prosthetics and to be standing, he says. But it was possible because people put their hands together, says Amang. They have contributed. Amang got prosthetic limbs thanks to golf federations and other donors, and was able to get back on the golf course. Pharmacist Ude Bahoenui was one of Amang's donors. She says when Amang was sick, she had her doubts. But as the golfer was abroad, says Bahoenui, he was sending photos to her, showing his training. She says little by little, she became confident that Amang was going to make it through. Amang did recover and became the only disabled professional golfer in West Africa.
Je ne peux pas dire que c'est un sentiment. C'est une vie que je reprends.
He says what he is feeling. He can't say it's a feeling. It's a life he is taking back. Playing golf is a sport of his life, says Amang, and the feeling floods him because he has no way out. except to play golf. Amang's willpower to keep playing was lauded by Cameroon's main disabled association, Handy Plus. But the group says more state support is needed for all those with reduced mobility, many of whom are forced to live behind closed doors due to lack of help and stigma. Honoré Essengue is president of Handy Plus.
Il a eu la chance d'avoir une solidarité par rapport à ses amis.
He says Amang was fortunate to receive solidarity from his friends. Those who have no friends, what are they going to do? Ask Essengue. He says at some point, the state will have to take responsibility for the disabled. As for Amang, he is training for upcoming competitions with the aim of winning Cameroon a gold medal at the next Paralympic Games. For Anne Zwanke in Yaoundé, Moki, Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Steve. That's my VOA colleague, Steve Miller. An update now on Tiger Woods, the American golf star who suffered serious leg injuries last month in a car crash near Los Angeles, California. Tiger is back at home in Florida to resume his recovery after being released from the hospital. In a tweet posted Tuesday, Woods wrote, and I quote, "Happy to report that I'm back home and continuing my recovery. I am so grateful for the outpouring of support and encouragement that I have received over the past few weeks." Tiger Woods was injured February 23rd and had a lengthy surgery that day at Harbor UCLA Medical Center for shattered tibia and fibula bones of his lower right leg. Those were stabilized with a rod in his tibia. Woods also suffered additional injuries to the bones in his foot and ankle, which required screws and pins. Tiger was later transferred to another Los Angeles hospital, Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, for follow-up procedures. The 45-year-old Woods also thanked the medical staff at both hospitals. And we here at the Sunny Side of Sports certainly wish Tiger Woods well as he continues his recovery. In National Basketball Association action Wednesday night, the Milwaukee Bucks edged the host Philadelphia 76ers by 4 points in an overtime thriller in a game between two of the league's top teams. The AP's Dave Ferry reports.
Giannis Antetokounmpo had a double-double, and the Bucks rallied from a 14-point halftime deficit to beat the 76ers 109-105 in overtime. Antetokounmpo delivered 32 points and 15 rebounds in Milwaukee's fifth win in a row. He scored 10 of the Bucks' 16 overtime points as they ended Philadelphia's six-game winning streak.
I was just, try to stay with it, play the right way, aggressive, just make the right play, that happened in the overtime, but before that, in the fourth quarter, I was making the right pass, I was finding teammates.
Tobias Harris had 19 points and 9 rebounds for the 76ers.
We had the looks we wanted, they just didn't fall. And I know myself, I would have took all those shots back that I got. I still thought we put ourselves in a position to win the game. It didn't go our way. We'll rest up and get ready for the next one.
I'm Dave Ferry.
Wraps up the March 18th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
get it.